You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Welcome to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt, where I improve my mental fitness so that I can help you do the same. And today I have some help with that. I have the pleasure of speaking with one of my favorite people, Josh Leinert, a Renaissance man of sorts known for his dynamic approach to life. Josh is an author, a poet, a photographer, a mindset coach, an endurance athlete, a mountaineer, a vandal, and unfortunately, Australian. Despite that disability, he uses his diverse experiences to inspire others. And his philosophy, it's the one percenters, reflects his belief in the power of small efforts and moments in shaping our lives. And his work aims to impart positivity and inspiration, a testament to his adventurous spirit and dedication to his own mental fitness, which is why I love him. Welcome, Josh Leinert.
Thank you so much. That was the best intro I've ever had in my life.
Fucking hey, take that.
Take that. Wow, that was done. That was awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
And that's the end of the podcast. I've made you feel good today. You can go home.
Yeah. Oh, it is really an honor to be here. Thanks.
And if you didn't get it from what I told you the other day and what I'm saying here, this podcast isn't about me, isn't about you. It's about what we have learned that can help the listeners. I'm sick of podcasts that just rattle on about people's stories, but don't actually really, that's more entertainment than it is informing. And we would like to entertain while we inform. And so we want to help these people. And so I gave you a little bit of homework. Did you understand the question I gave you?
I did. I had a good brainstorm about what mental fitness is. And then I guess my three things for mental fitness, I guess my take on mental fitness is, firstly, I looked at it as like, what is fitness in general from like a physical sense? And I thought, well, it's...
Of which you're a very, very, very fit man.
Yeah.
People have to understand that. Like 0.001% of fitness.
Yeah, I suppose so. But it's... I think fitness varies from person to person because I remember reading a book about a guy that went and lived with cowboys in Russia. And if I was to try and round up horses in Russia, I would be very unfit for that. And then if I was to go and be a power lifter, I wouldn't be able to lift much weight, but I'm fit for running, for hiking and all the things I want to do. And then I kind of...
Swimming is a good example too. Like you can be fit as hell and then ask to swim 50 meters and you're dead by the end of it.
Exactly. So then when I was like, well, fitness is developing like your battery or your tank to do the things that you want to do. And then I guess mental fitness is like developing your tank for life. I guess that's how I see it. And
I like it.
Yeah. And then from there, what tools are going to give you the best tank to, so you're not digging into reserves or going to extremes to just deal with the day-to-day activities life throws at you. That's my interpretation.
I like it. And that's sort of the question that I asked you the other day, which is like basically if you could teach the entire world three things, three techniques, three tips, three understandings, three insights, you know, what to improve their mental fitness, what would they be? And so, I mean, we can start with one.
Yeah, the first one, and I think it's the one that leans into everything and the one that you talked about in the intro is the one percenters. And that was, the one percenters was the first tattoo that I got. And basically my motto or the way I approach this philosophy in some sense is that life every day, you're going to have these main events. It's like today, it's like I'm recording a podcast. I went for a run, but it's the in-between moments in your day, the unexpected moments that make you smile. And so if you can look out for these moments and appreciate them, it's like, I think they're infinitely the most important. So when I'm on retreat, at the end of each day, I'll host a dinner. And I'll go around the table and be like, what was your one percenter? It's like, out of all the main events, it's like, nah, that's not it. It's like, was there a little kid on the street that gave you a high five? Was there a butterfly that landed on your finger? Was it just something random that made you smile? And then when you start to pay attention to these things throughout the day, at first it's this act of reflection, but then when you start to notice it almost in the moment, it's like this, it's an activity of awareness and presence. But if you can piece that over and over and over throughout your day, you're like, oh, wow, life really is incredible. But then the other side of the 1% is like always do. And that's more of a sporting context, I suppose, but always go above and beyond. But that can be, that can go into relationships, into friendships, into art, into creating. It's just like, all right, this is what I did. How can I go 1% more? But it's more the awareness side of things that I think is really important, because if you're going for a run and you're looking for the bird that lands on the tree, or you're out hiking and you notice the way the leaves brush against your skin and you're like, oh, that's my 1%er, I think that would actually lead to like my next tip of slowing down. I think the 1%ers help us to slow down and really just engage with life just a little bit better.
There's a study, a program that came out of Berkeley University, which is called the Five Senses Program. And basically, it's designed to rewire our brains from our inherent negative gearing and move it more towards the positive, which is similar to what you were talking about. And their program is that five times a day. So you can break that up into like breakfast, morning tea, afternoon tea, dinner sort of thing. Lunch as well. That's also a meal. And you check in on, yeah. Well, no, it's, but so that's, that comes back to what's called habit stacking. And so if you've already got a habit, then it's easier to stack a habit on top of that habit rather than completely start a brand new habit. And so, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner are already habits that we already do. And so if we tie a new habit in with that habit, then it's much easier to do. And then we've just got to put the snacks of morning tea and afternoon tea in there. But basically, those five times a day, you check in with your five senses. So you smell something and you go, that smells nice or horrible. Doesn't matter. You just got to check in with it. Taste, which is why it's good to put it around meals, because we don't just want to go licking the walls. Then, you know, your sight, look for something beautiful. That is a beautiful butterfly. That is a beautiful piece of architecture, whatever it is. Sound, you know, whether it is the birds tweeting or just a beautiful piece of music or whatever, right? So we check in five times a day with those five senses in order to refocus our brain towards the positive and away from the inherent negative gearing that we do.
I love that. And if you did that, it's like you drop in. And if you're thinking about the music that's playing it, you all of a sudden you're not thinking about these negative thoughts or whatever else is happening in your life. Or if you're focused on taste and you're fully immersed in like what you're tasting, you can't really be anywhere else. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think so that's really like, there you go.
No, so how, I want to know how you do that. Like, I mean, the concept is mindfulness. That's what this really is. And most people have heard about it. Most people sort of understand it inherently, but they don't do it. So do you have any tips for actually getting this done inside your day?
Yeah, for me, I think the best way to start is integrate it into your like dinner time practice. Like personally, I love to share dinner with people, and when I finish the end of the day, it's just like I'll go around the table and be like, what was your 1%er? And then it's such a beautiful practice, because rather than being like, what did you get up to today? And people just like autonomously just rattle off like what their day held. It's like actually it gets the cogs thinking. It gets them out of, and it gets them and me out of just going through the motions. You're like, hold up, what was something random today that made me smile? And I think that's like the first level. And then if you're not with people, just journal about it. If you don't like journaling, you could simply just write one word down that then summarizes. It's like the minimum viable action of mindfulness. It's just like write a summary, write a title. And I think once you start with that, and then each day you get to the end of the day and you're like, okay, what was my 1%er? Then you kind of move to like that in the moment of, that's a one percenter. And I think a lot of my friends who have now like started thinking about one percenters, it's they'll message me and be like, oh, this is my one percenter. And they understand that it's not this big event, it's just a small one. But I think integrating it at the end of the day is probably the best way to do it.
So how does like your concept of the one percenter differ from gratitude, for example?
I think the way I explain gratitude is I think that gratitude now is just so like largely talked about that it's just like, oh, what are you grateful for? Friends, family, food, shelter. And it's like they're all incredibly valid answers, but it's kind of like going deeper than that, but also just looking at the mundanities of life. And it's getting a little fist bump from a kid is not necessarily more important than the relationship I have with my family. But noticing that fist bump is, and the fact that it made me smile in a like a larger view, it's like, well, the fact that it made me smile is going to make me, if I come home to my family or come home to my friends, I'm going to be a little bit lighter. I'm going to be a little bit happier. And that's why it's important. But it's the idea of the practice is to stop that just like autonomous response of like, what are you grateful for? Yeah, friends, family, and dinner. So it's trying to go a little bit deeper.
So it's a practice of awareness, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, I like gratitude. I teach gratitude. I practice gratitude. And I agree with you that it can, in its commercial sense, it can be very flat, just very default answers as well. And so in my gratitude practice and teachings, like we should be grateful for every moment and we should be able to go into those moments and even be grateful for the shitty moments. So you're like, thank you. I'm so grateful for this teaching moment or this humbling moment or this whatever. Like you're grateful for the good and the bad. And so I think you're right in that there is a depth that needs to be added to what is commercial gratitude. But I also have no problem with commercial gratitude because the people who just do surface level gratitude weren't even doing that before.
Yeah, exactly right.
Only when they do that, do they then maybe hear something about me. I mean, I've done a whole episode on gratitude and stuff like that, but maybe do they hear that and then go, oh, now I can deepen that practice. But yeah, I love your idea of just creating the awareness through in the day by observing these things, which can be done in that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even on the flip side, if you do look at it as the 1% is that deeper practice, but it can also be that entry-level practice of maybe for some people it's like, oh, I don't know how I feel about gratitude, but I can think of something that made me smile. Like that's something that anybody can kind of wrap their head around. So yeah, whether it's intro or going deeper, I think it kind of fits both sides.
I like it. Your number two was slow down. And I love that. As a number two, I love, I've watched you do your retreats about this sort of stuff and things like that. But one of my little mantras is do less, better.
Yeah.
And in order to do less, better, you have to slow down.
I've actually tried to.
So I'd love to hear your take on, I'd love to hear your take on slowing down. In what is a ridiculously chaotic society we live in now.
Yeah. It's something that I've tried to adopt as best as I can as well, because I like to cram as much into my day as possible. But for me, go slow is about being sustainable. It's about playing the long game. And it's like, if you really want to do anything in life, fast is not the way to do it. It's like, you can... Yeah. You can do things fast for a while. You can be busy, but at some stage you're going to like run yourself into a wall. Whereas if you're playing the long game, it's like, I think about it, say if you go overseas, and this is like a very direct example for me, rather than trying to hit 20 cities in 3 weeks on a Europe trip, it's like, just go and spend 3 weeks in one town, go to the same cafe, develop relationships, know the streets well, know where your favorite place to eat pizza is. And you get to find out all the character. It's like going slow builds depth And with depth comes connection, knowing, understanding. You get to, it's like anything great in life is like you think of your strongest friendships. They're not always, but or any relationship, the better the relationship is, like it's usually one that's like really had time to flower over a long time. And it's like you could have a new friend, but it's like you think of someone that's just come into your life and how much you love them. And it's like, think about how strong that connection is going to be in 5 years' time, 10 years' time. But it's just like, how can you play the long, sustainable game?
Yeah, but then I'm going to miss out. There's lots of cool cities to see and lots of things to do. I need to get it done in this time. Well, I mean, yeah. I might never get to see it all. What am I going to do?
Then I guess it's like, well, still go and see all the cities, but then how do you engage slowly when you're in that city? It's like, okay, then it's like rather than trying to do 10 things in a day, it's like, how can I slow down in that day? How can I sit at coffee a little bit longer? What are the things that are actually going to, again, it kind of just comes back to awareness and presence, but it's like, how can I drop into this city on this day the best I can? Or it's like, if I'm racing, it's just like, what's going to like make me take in as much of the course as possible? How many people can I talk to on the start line? And kind of like how many different touch points of life can I get to like, it's almost like putting more words on a page. It's like the more words there are on a page, the longer it's going to take you to read in terms of answering your last question. So if you want to see all the things in a day, it's like, okay, well, how many like, yeah, senses can I activate that are going to kind of slow me down to get through the city?
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I mean, I've lived a very, very, very fast life. And everything I've always done has always been as fast as possible. And I did a podcast and they asked the question, when I say they, I mean, Libby asked the question in the last episode of my podcast about, you know, if there was a lesson on my walk, what would it be? And it was probably slow down. And I think I did really embrace everything a lot. But yeah, I did go pretty quick. I could have definitely slowed down.
What have you noticed from doing less and trying to do it better?
Yeah. So, I mean, just by default, if you do less, it will be inherently better. So you don't even have to do it better. Just because you're doing less, that means you're not spreading yourself so thin. So therefore your time, your skills, your expertise will be more focused. And so whatever it is you're doing, it will just inherently be better. But I think one of the big keys to doing less is to understand like intrinsically what is and is not important, because we inherently make everything so goddamn important. But when you create space around that, when you can objectively and impartially view that, you're like, oh, it's actually not all that important. And if I just didn't do it, the world would not end.
Definitely.
And then we're like, oh, but if I don't do it, so-and-so will be disappointed. Let them be. Like, their happiness is not your concern, right? And so when I say that, I mean like, please come to the party. You know, if I don't want to go to that party, then if I need to do less and that is one of the things I need to do less, then sure. Or most of the work we do, when you start looking at Pareto principle, right, we know that we get 80% of our results out of 20% of our actions. And then if we want that extra 20%, we're going to put an 80% more effort. And we're like, oh, yeah, cool. Then I'll just try and do that extra 80% instead of just going, whoa, like, do less and just get that 80% and be happy with it, because you don't actually need the last 20.
Correct. Yeah. That's spot on. Do less, do it better.
Yeah. What tips do you have for people to actually slow down? We know the benefits of slowing down, but again, it's one of those things that when we talk about it to people, it's like, yeah, you should do this. And people are like, yeah, I should do this. And then no one fucking does it, because it's actually harder than you think it is. So what tips do you have for people to actually slow down in their busy, chaotic lives? Because you and I don't have four kids each.
Right.
We don't have two jobs each, right? We don't have all of these sorts of things, and some people do. And when they hear slow down, they just look at us and go, fuck you.
They do. Yeah, I've had that one a few times.
And so what do you say to them? How do you explain the benefits of slowing down to somebody in that state?
I think the first question that I ask people is, what is the cost of being busy? And then helping them understand when you're in a state of being busy, what is the cost to your support network? What is the cost to your vision? What is the cost to your work? And it's just like, okay, if you're, and say in your support work, that's your friends, your family, your colleagues. If I'm busy, I get less sleep. When I get less sleep, then I'm a little bit more grumpy. When I'm a bit more grumpy, I don't get to be the vibrant person I want to be to my friends. When I'm busy, I don't get to put as many hours towards this long-term dream I've had, and that's the vision. And when I'm busy, it's like the quality of my work suffers. And then if that was a Venn diagram, you have all these different kind of overlaps. It's just like the overlap between work and your support network is like we work to, I guess, make a living, to live life, and our support. And then we have this dream, but both the support and the work people help us make this vision come to life. So it's like understanding what the impact of being busy is. But then I say to people, okay, what are your pillars? Like, what are the, I think it's the building in Greece is called like the Pantheon. I always get it mixed up. Yep. It's like, what are the pillars that hold up your structure as a being? Or like, what are the things that you can go back to that are kind of going to drop you into feeling relaxed? And for me, it's like every day it's call a friend, speak to a friend. It's journaling. It's get outside. And if I'm having like a really crap day, it's like, just take myself for a pizza. And they're going to be the things that like drop me back and help me slow down. So I think it's, my tip is like, well, understand when you are busy, what is the cost? Because when you know, when you can see the difference between the version of you that is living quote unquote slowly versus the version of you that just has the foot on the accelerator going down the highway at 160 and you're just missing all this life, you're like, okay, you first got to understand the difference. And then it's like, what are the things that slow you down? Okay, talking to a friend, I can't be busy. Eating pizza at my favorite restaurant, can't be busy. Journaling, I can't be busy. So then working out what these small practices are that that make you feel slow. But then another activity that I give to people is like, what is your 5 minute? Like if you work a 9 to 5, that's 480 minutes. So, and then going back to the first, to the 1%ers, it's like 1% of your day is 4.8 minutes. Round that up to 5. We all have a 5 minute little block in our day that we can just take to ourselves. So like put a 5 minute block in your day and it's like, go and stand outside bare feet, go and stand out, go and just lay on your back on the grass. Like pretty much how can you ground yourself to the earth or do something for yourself? Maybe some people on my retreats is like, I'm going to get to work 5 minutes early and write a to-do list. And by doing that, that slows me down and makes the rest of my day feel calmer, slower, smoother. So it's like find out a 5 minute pocket of your day before work, after work. Could be had people been like, I get home from work and before I enter the house, I'm just going to stand on my front lawn bare feet for 5 minutes. And then before I go inside and have to cook dinner for the kids and with all the chaos in the kitchen, I've just like taken a moment to be like, deep breath, here we go. So I think the 5 minute activity is great. And then going back to a conversation that we had 3 years ago about what's something you can do every day for 1,000 days. It's like, if you can do this 5 minute activity every day for 1,000 days, it will actually change your life. If you went and stood barefoot on the grass every day for 5 minutes for the next 1,000 days, you will feel calmer.
100%. So what's your number three, Josh? What are we going to teach the world that will improve their mental fitness?
Well, when I coming into this podcast, I was like, it's time in nature. But thinking about number two and how they kind of stack onto each other is like, understand what you want to feel. I think that is, and kind of like have a guiding North Star. But I think in modern society, it's, and the society that we're in, we're so goal and object or material, like materially driven. It's just like, oh, in a year from now, I want to have a car, a house, a TV, go on this holiday, run this race, run this pace. But it's like, actually, rather than having these goals, it's like, what do you want to feel in a year from now? And it's like, that might be strong, that might be calm, composed, energized. And then once you understand the feeling, then it's like you reverse engineer everything back from that. And so like a feeling for me,
I love
is,
it.
What do you go?
No, I love it.
Oh.
I love it. Making your goals habits and not outcomes.
Definitely. And then like a great example for me was like I ran this 50K race and I won, but afterwards I was like, well, I won this race, but I don't feel great. Like, what's going on with that? I should be feeling awesome. But I was, and that was like a huge like light bulb moment for me. And now it's like, rather than looking at a result, it's like, I want to feel strong. I want to feel strong in the mind. I want to feel strong in the heart. I want to feel strong in the soul. So to like feel strong in the soul, it's like, I want to race and have fun. To feel strong in the body, it's like, I want to do the due diligence of training both mentally and physically. To want to feel strong in the heart, it's like, I want to align racing to an adventure because I know adventure fills my cup up. So, and then it's like, no matter what my result is in a race, it's like, it doesn't matter because I feel strong in those different areas. But if it was energized or calm, then it's like, as soon as you start a day, are the actions and activities that I do throughout this day, are they going to make me feel calm? And that's on the micro level, but it's like you stack up. If you gear every decision you make towards this North Star that you're working towards or this North Star feeling, then eventually you're going to feel that if you're making all the micro adjustments each day. And you might veer off course, but it's like if you have this guiding feeling, I think it's comes back to that sustainability piece as well.
Yeah. And one of the things I actually do with people in my mentoring is I ask them, who do you want to be?
Yeah.
Like, who do you want to become? And people are like people don't even know what that North Star is. People don't know where they want to go. And the reason that I ask them, who is the person you want to become, is because if you can clearly understand who you want to become, then that allows you to check in with each moment and each decision along the way and ask yourself the simple question, does this move me closer or further away to the person I want to become?
Definitely.
Real simple.
Yeah.
But unless you know that, then what? You're just wandering. You're just floating.
Exactly. A tangent to that is once you know that person that you want to be, then it's like if you're walking down the street and someone across the road recognizes you on the street, Jimmy, and they're like, oh, I followed Jimmy. I'd really love to have a chat to them, but they don't because they're too nervous. But if they wanted to be a confident person, if like confidence was something that they wanted to work on, and they're like, would the person that I want to be go up and talk to Jimmy? Well, then,
exactly.
I have to act on that's that exactly because that's the person I want to be.
Yeah. And I can only become that person if I do the things that that person would do.
Exactly. So,
all right, last question for you. If you're in a race, one of those really long, stupid races that you do, and you can choose any fictional character as your running partner, who would be the most entertaining or the worst choice and why?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to be thinking on this one, the fictional character.
Just what comes to mind. Who would be like awesome to be running beside you going, come on, Josh, let's go. Or who would you like, fucking fuck off. I don't want you here. Go away. Either or, take either side of it.
The first thing that comes to mind is Daffy Duck. I just love.
Are you running away from? Are you running away from him because you're scared that there's a life-size duck chasing you?
I think so. I just love Looney Tunes, and I wear Daffy Duck t-shirts. But I think it'd be pretty. I just feel like fuck off, Daffy. Just let me run. Stop yapping.
Excellent.
I'll text you something in 3 weeks.
It would actually
weeks
be
time.
Quite scary. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you will. Thank you. I appreciate those three really solid insights onto like how we can improve our mental fitness, right? So number one, 1%ers, right?
Yeah, appreciate the 1%ers.
Yeah, if we can just look for those little things in our day, it's a mix of mindfulness, it's a mix of gratitude, it's even a mix of like Kaizen, which is Japanese for the art of continual improvement, slowing down. All of us do need to slow down. There's so much. Even just slowing down allows you to see stuff better, which allows you to go faster.
That's exactly.
One of the most ridiculous things.
It sure is.
And then the last one, I fucking escaped the top of my head already. Go. What was the third one?
The third one was have a feeling. Understand what you want to feel.
Yes. Your North Star, of course. That's like understand where we're going and definitely like chase the feelings and the habits that accompany those instead of the outcomes. Because as soon as you were saying that about that, I was like, in 1 year, I had a laundry list of some of the biggest achievements you could have in this country. And at the end of that year, I was still sad because the outcomes don't matter. The outcomes aren't the things you think they are or hope they are. But hopefully you can learn some skills along the way that will end up getting you things, but you'll just be stoked on the feelings that you get out of it.
Yeah, they might not be what you expected or how you anticipated them to look, but if they're usually going to be quite wonderful if you're following a feeling.
I love it. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate
awesome.
Your insights on everything. Yeah, that's what we do. We'll have you back on again. If you think of anything else cool that's going to change people's lives, then we'll just have you back on and we'll talk some more. I appreciate it. Good. Love you.
Love you too, man.
See you later.
See you later.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.